All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubik in the morning, 8 a.m. Friday, January 21st, getting set for the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. And joining us on the Bud Light Hotline, Chris the Bear Felica, as always, G-Mac, brought to us by Atlas Senior Living.
And with locations throughout the Southeast, Atlas Senior Living will have you taken care of. They're in Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, and coming soon to the great state of Texas. They have the recreational programming that your loved ones will absolutely love. Whether it's the independent living, they promote a healthy and energetic lifestyle. It's the dependent living or the memory care communities. They're going to take care of your loved ones in a way that only Atlas Senior Living can. So if you want to learn more, check out Atlas Senior Living, A-T-L-A-S, seniorliving.com to find out as much as humanly possible. And they bring us our dear friend, Chris the Bear Felica, as often as humanly possible. What's going on, my friend?
Little distracted this morning by my guy Alcaraz couldn't complete the comeback. Last night against Berrettini, had so many chances in that first set to break in the early part of the set and could have get it done, and then wound up losing a tie break in the second, and then a tie break in the final set.
Well, so, I don't want to hear that. I have Berrettini. You need to stop.
I had a nice Alcaraz picking up 40-1. So that's why I'm a little dejected this morning. But
I'm soft that I took.
It's a new day.
I took Alcaraz as a open-ended three-way parlay -185 yesterday too, just as a hedge, because I think Berrettini now cruises to the semis. Like, I think Berrettini is in the semis, and I can get through there pretty easily.
Well, that's the thing. PCB is going to be someone, I think, in the fourth round who he's another guy who just returns everything. So we'll see if he can have some success against Berrettini serve. But, yeah, and that's the great thing. Like, with so many of these, and I know down in Alabama that you don't have these legalized apps, but, like, when you hit certain levels and certain point levels, you get all these free bets. So I just put a nice sized free bet on Alcaraz to win, and then in the last night I was like, okay, Berrettini's an underdog in the match. Let me just I can guarantee risk free profit. Either I advance with a $250 free bet on a 40-1 shot, or I hit my underdog risk free, and I can just play against the 40-1 shot moving forward. So. It really is a great thing when you're able to kind of maximize these offers that you get from these books like DraftKings.
Bear, I want to roll into some college basketball coming up this weekend. Obviously, a massive matchup happening down on the plains at Auburn between the Tigers and Kentucky. We know what that home court means. And I feel like we've seen more teams either be undefeated at home, have a great record at home, and we see what Kentucky's done at home this year. Obviously, what Auburn's doing at home this year. There are a lot of teams, I feel like, that are just dominant. I mean, Indiana, who knocked off Purdue, they're undefeated, 12-0 at home this year. So home court seems to maybe just be even a little bit larger this year than it has been in some years past. But how are you viewing right now this Auburn-Kentucky matchup tomorrow at noon on CBS?
Yeah, I like Auburn in the game. I think the fact that they're still getting a little bit disrespected in the rankings, as crazy as that seems to be. I mean, and I think you hit on it. I think after whatever everyone went through last year and kind of the lack of home court and just the way things were going, like, I think home court does matter a lot. I think the people are just so excited to be in these buildings at full capacity, and the players are excited to have that energy. I do think home court matters. I love this Auburn team. I love the way they go up and down the floor. I love the way they play. Knowing Bruce Pearl like half for a while now, I'm a big fan of his and happy to see the success he has. And maybe that Kentucky game the other day was a little bit of them kind of looking past and looking to this weekend, knowing that they have a massive matchup. But I like Auburn in the game tomorrow.
It's one of those that I just have a really difficult time thinking that Auburn won't play their very best tomorrow. I really believe that. I have a very, very difficult time thinking that. Bear, when you think about some of these NFL teams, we were texting a little yesterday about San Francisco, Green Bay. Like, I'm all over San Francisco, because the line stinks to me. that everyone and their brother thinks Packers north of a touchdown. Explain to me how we should look and evaluate some of these lines for the weekend when it just feels too good to be true.
Well, this is, I mean, if you go down the board, like, it's unanimous. Like, I mean, there's been a stray person here or there, but for the most part, everybody's on Cincinnati. I mean, everybody's on Tennessee. Everybody's on Green Bay. Everybody's on the Rams. Everybody's on the Bills. Like it's the two favorites tomorrow, and it's the two underdogs on Sunday. And I think that's a very dangerous situation for the teams that, I mean, we've joked about this before. Like, those buildings in Las Vegas aren't built because everybody, when they're on the same page, is right. I can make a great case for Cincinnati. First of all, we'll go back to the game you started talking about with Green Bay. The numbers come down to 5.5 now. It hits 6. But I have every ounce of me wants to play San Francisco on the money line. But it's just a hard thing to do right now, not knowing if Nick Bosa is going to be 100%, not knowing if Fred Warner is going to be 100%, not knowing that you're going to get the Jimmy G moment in the game like you did against Dallas last week where he had the ridiculous interception. But that's a 49ers team that in that first meeting against the Packers, they had some bad penalties. It was a weird game, and they just left Aaron too much time at the end of the game to lead them down on the winning field goal drive. But the way San Francisco plays defense, the way they can rush the quarterback, I know Green Bay is getting some guys back, but I would love to see San Francisco go up there and win the game. It's probably a game for me that I'm going to ultimately stay away from unless this thing hits 6 again. If it hits 6 again, then I can see myself putting in a late little flyer on San Francisco. But until you get more information, it's a hard time. It's a hard game to have a really firm opinion on, especially when the only opinion in this game seems to be the exact same one that Green Bay is the right side with coming off the idle week.
I kind of feel like that's where we are with the Rams and Tampa as well, just because of where the line is, and most everybody seems to be thinking that the Rams going to find a way to get this done, albeit on the road. But does that one look a little bit inaccurate to you when you just see the fact that Tampa's favored in that game?
It does. The opinion, like the automatic opinion, basically kind of what you're saying is you know that the Rams are not going to be able to run on Tampa Bay. So like basically you're saying you're going to take Matthew Stafford on the road to go on there and basically out-duel Tom Brady. That's basically what it comes down to. And kind of like I was just joking about Jimmy G, like you're going to get the Jimmy G moment. You know what you're going to get at it. You're going to get a pick or two. You're going to get a bad decision, and you're betting against Tom Brady at home. Like the biggest issue, obviously, is Wirfs going to be able to play? Like that would look like a bad injury. I don't know why he even bothered coming back into the game last week in a game that they didn't need him. But you will never. It's a weird thing to say, but there are like instances where. Like, I will never feel bad about, like, betting on Bill Belichick. I'll never feel bad about betting on Nick Saban and Alabama and losing. Like, I will never regret saying, okay, I'm gonna bet on Tom Brady in the NFL playoffs with a chance to go to the conference championship games as a field goal, 2.5-point favorite. Like, I won't regret that if they lose. Like, if I say I'm betting on Matthew Stafford on the road against Tom Brady as an underdog and they want to lose them by double digits, I'm going to regret making that bet. Like, I am not going to regret betting on Tampa Bay on Sunday afternoon. So I would lay the points here with the Bucs and that defense against the Rams team that I think is going to be one-dimensional. Remember, too, that was a lot of just pathetic Cardinals on Monday night. Like, that was an Arizona team that was spiraling down the drain as the season ended. So I think that's kind of clouding people's vision of the Rams a little bit as well.
It's hard not to back Brady as less than a 3-point dog, but now it's up to 3. It's a little bit more tempting to hop on the Rams bandwagon, but I can certainly understand what you mean, as the sharp money is certainly coming in on Tampa Bay. The one that I'm having a difficult time with is Buffalo, Kansas City, because I think Buffalo's the better team, but I think Kansas City has the highest ceiling. And if Kansas City gets going, it's a wrap. I think betting against Kansas City is the most dangerous thing you can do as an NFL gambler, because it takes just one play and it's a wrap. It's over. Like, I had Pittsburgh first half. I had Pittsburgh under first half. I mean, last week it was money in the bank, tickets cashed. And then sure enough, one play and it's all over. So I guess, how would you handle Buffalo against Kansas City?
I love this game. This is the only game of the four that I absolutely love, and I love the Chiefs in this game.
Really?
I think people are, again, I think it's a great opportunity to sell high on the Bills coming off of a perfect game last week. That you're not going to get that again. It was a Patriots offense that is pretty much out of commission, for lack of a better word. And defensively, they had some parts missing, and they just couldn't get any stops. If people are pointing to that first game, there were so many high variance plays in that game. The Bills had two long touchdowns. The Bills got four turnovers in the game, including a pick six, a fumble on a kickoff return that eliminated a drive for the Chiefs, an interception in the red zone, and a fumble in the red zone. So, you're talking about point swing plays. And in addition, this is a Chiefs defense that didn't have Ingram. Chris Jones was hurt in the game. There were guys. Thornhill didn't play very much. This is a completely different Chiefs defense than the team that they faced earlier in the year. Look, I get it with the Bills. I get the infatuation and the love and the respect for Josh Allen, his ability to do damage with his arms and his legs. But again, you're betting against a guy that's been to a few straight AFC championship games and a couple Super Bowls in a row. That's a dangerous thing. And basically you're just taking them in a toss up to win the game. The way the Chiefs defense is playing now and the fact that they got past last week and they're healthy now. I was a little worried last week about Tyreek Hill and Kelce maybe not being fully healthy, but they are. I think it's a great spot for the Chiefs, and I really like Kansas City against Buffalo.
Bear, we always appreciate the time, man. Great stuff as always. Look forward to catching up with you next week.
Okay, guys, great. Have a great weekend.
Chris the Bear Felica joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. Carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste when there's fun, Bud Light is there. He joins us each and every week. Thanks to our friends at Atlas Senior Living. When we come back, we know nothing is melting down in Nashville as the Titans set to take on the Bengals. But if we went a couple hundred miles west, are things melting down there? We'll find out right after this on McElroy and Kubik in the morning. Welcome back in. McElroy and Kubik in the morning. I would like to introduce Penny Hardaway to your CBD store. Because your CBD store has products. He doesn't need the trim by SunMed that can help you with weight loss. They've got that. And he may not need broad spectrum mango CBG gummies to help wake him up in the morning, or full spectrum blueberry CBN gummies that get you a restful night's sleep. Maybe he does need some more sleep, but anxiety, maybe calm you down a little bit. They have products for that at the largest brick and mortar CBD retailer in the world. They can help you with that. If it's arthritis, obviously you, your pet, they can help you with that. They've helped me out with that as well. Go check out one of their four locations, Highway 280 by Bailey Brothers, 150 by the Cajun Cleaver, Trustful just off 459, and now downtown at Five Points, your CBD store, where good health hits home. Why do I bring up Penny Hardaway? Well, last night, Memphis struggling a little bit. SMU, 70-62, knocks off Memphis. Good news for SMU, they've won 11-12. Bad news for Memphis, they're 4-8 in their last 12 after starting 5-0 this season. Memphis shot 1-of-12 from the three-point line last night. 21 points in the first half of the game. 21 for Memphis, lowest in a half this season. Imani Bates, 6 points, shooting 3 of 9, 0 for 2 on threes. He's shooting 39% from the floor this year. And Penny Hardaway was asked last night, head coach of the Memphis Basketball Tigers, can he get this right?
I think the one thing I can say to this media, because this media gets kind of up sometimes when it comes to me. We don't have our full roster. Y'all know we don't have our full roster. Stop asking me stupid questions about if I feel like I can do something. If I had my roster like they did, then I feel like I can do whatever I want to do. I'm coaching really hard. My boys are playing really hard. I'm not embarrassed about nothing. We have four freshmen starting. Y'all need to act like it. Act like we got 17, 18, and 19-year-olds out here trying to learn how to play against 22, 23, and 24-year-old guys. Come on, man. Stop disrespecting me, bro. Like, don't do that. I work too hard. I work way too hard for that. Y'all write all these articles about me, and all I do is work. We got young kids on the floor. They got young kids on the floor.
How many 24-year-olds are playing college hoops right now, do we think? Out, not at BYU.
There's good probably point. More now than ever before. There 24? Might be. There might be one.
24.
20. That's, yeah. That's a stretch.
I'm tempted to go down the SMU roster and start looking up birthdays because I don't think that they got a 24-year-old on the team. But that, I could be wrong. I hadn't seen the tape on SMU hoops.
Is anybody feeling bad for anyone right now as it pertains to like Penny Hardaway? I can promise you who I'm not losing sleep over. Of all the world's travesties that are going on right now, the last thing I'm concerned about is Memphis basketball and Penny Hardaway being disrespected. First of all, how are you being disrespected? Yeah. Like you've lost a couple games. Like you're still a tournament team. Like you're going to be all right.
You're right. I feel like it's fair.
Yeah.
The thing that caught me off guard the most, play like the first 10 seconds just again and kind of start from the beginning.
I think the one thing I can say to this media, because this media gets kind of...
Okay, stop right there. What is this media? Memphis, is it like the local media?
Maybe.
Like just the Memphis media? Or is it just the college basketball media? What is this media?
I'm thinking Memphis.
The media that doesn't coddle me and coddle my team?
Yeah.
Is it that media?
I think.
I don't like that media.
No, this media. That one right there last night. I'm not exactly sure what Penny thought he was going to have. He's had two number one recruiting classes. Two.
Yeah.
Number one overall recruiting classes. And so I'm not sure that a lot of people think that just because you have a freshman or a couple of freshmen that are playing that it shouldn't go well.
Right. In a sport that has basically prided itself on one and dones for a while. So not just are you going out there with 17, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds.
But you have the most talented, the most talented 19-year-olds.
Exactly.
And how many coaches are taking – Memphis's second line against SMU's first line almost every night. If you're including two number one recruiting classes, then probably there. What do you think he's going to get? I know as an AAU coach, you didn't have to answer questions about your team's wins or losses, but what was the expectation, G-Mac, that he was never going to have to answer for bad losses or never going to have to talk about his team not playing well?
I think you're in the clear. Why would you have to answer for that? Hey, coach, tell us how fun it is to be coaching these kids. Hey, coach, are you having a good time? Hey, coach, what's your favorite restaurant here in Memphis? Like, what kind of questions did he anticipate getting?
What was the biggest disagreement you and Shaq had?
I think it was financial. Hey,
Penny, how many takes did it take on the Little Penny commercials with you and Chris Rock to actually get the final cut? I don't know. But
fair questions.
You've had back-to-back number one recruiting classes and you're 9-8. You're 3-4 in the league. And by the way, we can't just completely push SMU to the side because like I said, they're riding a nice little winning streak here and have won 11 of 12. They're 14-4 on the season. Only Houston is better in the American right now than SMU. 24-year-olds, not really sure. Again, have to check the birth certificates. Are we going to pull the John Whitten when I was playing 8 and 9-year-old park league baseball where he was 50 pounds heavier than everybody and literally every game we played, another parent would say, birth certificate. They would stop the game after the first pitch and say, we got to see the birth certificate.
Got to see it.
I mean, I'm 8 years old and I know that, but we just did this the last game. I don't know a lot at 8, but I know we did this the last game we played in the last 3 games. So why are we doing it again? But every team wanted to see it. Is that where we are? Do we need to go check birth certificates of the SMU players? Wild to me that a guy who's been around as much as Penny's been around, and I understand the frustration. Listen, after a loss, you're a competitor. You want to win. Nobody's going to.
That true?
Nobody's going to bang on Penny for that.
But I am. I feel like
it's, you start blaming it on the age of the players in college hoops. You start blaming it on availability in any college sport right now. I mean, every team, every sport is dealing with availability issues somewhere, somehow, some way.
Correct.
That's just where we are.
I don't feel sorry for him. I don't feel sorry for any coach right now that's going to make excuses when everyone's playing under the same rules. Now, take that back. Not everyone's playing under the same rules. Cal Berkeley is playing under their own rules. But other places, for the most part, everyone's kind of having to do the same thing. I don't feel sorry for anybody. Find a way. Quit making excuses. And if you can't find a way, then so be it. But if you get to face the music, bud, you make a lot of money. Got to face the music.
Zero doubt. All right, Gonzaga took out San Francisco last night, 78-62. 62 straight home wins for the Zags. 25 straight conference wins. 58 straight versus unranked teams. Drew Timmy goes 23 points, seventh 20-point game of the year. The rest of the Gonzaga roster has six 20-point games this year. So they continue to play good ball. Number one team in the nation. I mentioned earlier when we had Felica on, Indiana knocks off number four Purdue, 68-65. Indiana 12-0 at home this year. Purdue's 1-2 against ranked opponents on the road this season. And then locally, VMI took out Samford 99-80. Troy took out ULM 73-65, and South Alabama 77-70 over ULL last night. This Auburn-Kentucky game coming up this weekend, just a massive matchup. And I think that there are so many little matchups, intriguing matchups inside of just being the fact that it's Auburn-Kentucky 12-4, obviously in Auburn Arena, which has become just an amazing place to play. Noon on CBS is where you can catch the game. But I look at a lot of different matchups, Greg, in just – how excited I am to see what we're going to get with Shibue against Walker Kessler, against Smith. I mean, some of the bigs in this game are going to be a lot of fun to watch. But then when you throw in the fact that Sevier Wheeler, who leads the SEC in assists per game, has had some turnover issues the last few games. And then we've talked about what Auburn's able to do by throwing different guards, whether it's Wendell Green, whether it's KD Johnson, that can come out and defend you in the open floor. There are a lot of just little micro matchups inside of this mega matchup that we're going to get in Auburn Arena tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at the game, it's as much about, like, I don't think Auburn needs to prove anything to me. I'm not sure Auburn needs to prove anything to anyone else in this footprint, anyone else in the state of Alabama. But I'm not sure that the national audience, this is for the guy in Kansas that voted Auburn number nine.
Jesse Newell.
This is the blue bloods versus new bloods conversation. So we can get into the details of the actual matchup itself. The one-on-one, like you said, Kessler against Shibue, and whatever. We can dive as deep into that as you want. But ultimately, if we're going to look at this from a 30,000-foot perspective, this could, for all intents and purposes, be Auburn's coming out party. Because I don't think there's a lot of people that have paid enough attention to what Auburn's done up to this point. Should they have? Yeah, I would argue that they should. But I think that there's a legitimate resistance, not all that dissimilar to SEC fans kind of pushing off UCF of the world a couple years ago. Like, oh, UCF doesn't belong because they're not a traditional power. Understandable. Auburn's not a traditional power. But they're really dang good, and I think if they can go out and play at a ridiculously high level the way they're capable of playing on a fairly regular basis, and they beat Kentucky convincingly, nobody is going to be doubting Auburn's greatness anymore. And if they can hammer Kentucky, and maybe they will, then I think that they would even have a stronger argument to be on the one line the following week, given the fact that they battled against two solid opponents this week, even though Georgia's really not that great.
Zepp Jasper against Sevier Wheeler, another matchup that we're going to get in the backcourt that it's just going to be a lot of fun. And you look at this Kentucky team. Now, defensively, we know what Auburn is, whether it's Johnson, Jasper, whoever we mentioned in the backcourt. I mean, even Walker Kessler is you know, towards the top of the league in steals. We know the bigs defensively, what they're going to be able to provide the guards. But this Kentucky team, they lead the SEC 83 points per game. They're shooting 50% from the floor, and they rebound like crazy. Now, they have the best rebounder in maybe college basketball. I mean, Dane Bradshaw told us he thought he was Sheba is maybe the best rebounder he had ever seen at any level. 17 rebounds per game for the Wildcats. But Auburn, number one team in the nation in blocks, lead the SEC in 8.5 blocks per game. Just those matchups and just how they're going to be able to operate, do different things, I think it's going to make it a lot of fun. It's not just that it's Auburn-Kentucky. It's that there's some versatility in both of these lineups, and we're going to get big-time matchups with that versatility with both of these clubs as they face off at Auburn Arena tomorrow at noon on CBS. Missouri's at Alabama. That's a 5 o'clock tip tomorrow. Missouri floating just below 500 right now, but still a dangerous team as after getting blown out about a week ago, they seem to be bouncing back, and Alabama's still kind of living on the edge, playing inconsistent basketball at 12-6, 3-3 in the league, but one at home that Alabama needs. This is not one that you can drop. This is not one that I think you can sort of let slip away because we know it's still ahead for Alabama, and a lot of people would point to them and say, you know, oh, difficulty, oh, this. Well, those are games Alabama can also go prove themselves. Right now, the resume for Alabama has multiple quality wins, and you have a chance to get a few more of those down the stretch, but you don't want to have one like this slip away because you have an opportunity to potentially get Missouri and Georgia before you go play a top-five Baylor team, which is going to be followed up by a top-five Auburn team on the road, which is going to be followed up by a top 15 Kentucky team at home.
Mm.
Got to rack up some wins before you get to that stretch.
Yes. Because if you look at the, I mean, if you look at just everything that's upcoming, you better be dialed in, right? Like, and this is not the time to be like, oh, well, we're still trying to figure it out. This is not the time to be doing that. This is the time to start. I mean, granted, we're still got a long way to go, right? I mean, we still have how many weeks? How many games until?
Well, we got to get through the first week of March for the regular season.
I think it's second week. I think it's even the second week now.
Yeah, that March 5th area for the SEC.
That's the last week of the regular season.
That's the last week of the regular season.
Correct. Yeah. And then you have the SEC tournament. And then, of course, so I believe it's March 18th or whatnot is the beginning of March Madness. I believe that's the first day. And this is kind of at the time, though, where it's like put up or shut up time. Right? Like you have to start peaking at this point, start to get some momentum at this point. I'm not saying you need to like win out from here on out. It's 12 games. I don't think anyone expects to have to go undefeated between now and then. But now is the time to start to ascend and to start to identify, all right, who are our reliable pieces and how are we going to make sure that they're comfortable every time we take the court?
Absolutely. Who's peaking right now in the NFL? As we go back to these NFL playoffs, take a look at those. Obviously, momentum big in the playoffs. You want that postseason run. You want to be able to find a way to continue to just ride the wave of emotion or feel or rhythm or timing that you've had throughout those playoffs. And when you look at some of these matchups, some of these teams, like who do you feel most comfortable about that has that on their side right now? Hard to say with some of the teams that we haven't seen because Tennessee's going to be a different team. You feel great about who they're getting back. I mean, the last time they had Julio, AJ, and Derek all healthy together was, what, 2 months ago, 3 months ago? So it's been a while.
It feels like forever.
Just since they've had that. So you don't really know emotionally what they're riding, but that's a team that probably needed the extra time off and will greatly benefit from that. You know, Green Bay, not extremely beat up, but whether it's Jai Alexander, Za'Darius Smith, that maybe could come back and give you valuable reps, that could benefit that team. Did the Rams need what they got last week? Because to me, the Rams are a team that mentally, I feel like I probably have less confidence in than I do some of these other teams. I know what Tampa Bay
is. Why Rams?
Well, I'm going to tell you. I know what Tampa is mentally and emotionally. I feel like I got a pretty good feel
right.
What Tennessee is mentally and emotionally. Green Bay, not concerned there. I have no concern about mentally and emotionally what they are. And I'd probably say the same thing about San Francisco with the different points of leadership and sort of where they make their money. Now, Cincinnati, I'll say a bit of an unknown. Don't really know. But I do wonder just if the Rams, based on some of the personalities on that team, based on sort of...
Weather the storm.
They sort of feel like a momentum-based
Correct.
Football team.
I'm with you.
So where are they right now? And I begin to wonder, was that more beneficial for them to play last week, but then get the kind of game that they got last week heading into this matchup with Tampa this weekend? Because at the end of the day, Tom Brady's on the other side of the field.
Right.
12's going to have the ball in his hand, and that's a mental hurdle, especially in the postseason.
Yeah, that 12 is definitely a difference maker. And I think that he is the unflappable piece that has you feeling uber confident that everything's going to be okay, right? Like he, even in the most adverse, and look, he's looked human in the playoffs too. Like we forget, I think we conveniently forget his moments, even his last Super Bowl performance with the Patriots against the Rams. I mean, it was far from a stellar performance. I think if you look at his performance against Tennessee the following year, not a great look for Tom Brady. So yes, more often than not, though, he's been superhuman in the playoffs. And I think that that team does have a certain sense of we've been here before, we're going to be fine, and no need to panic. Whereas Odell goes two series without having three catches, he literally might go Antonio Brown on everybody. You know, I mean, there are some lightning rod personalities, but Odell, I think, man, I don't know. I just feel like there's something about this Rams team, and I know it's trendy. I get that. Everybody's on the Rams, and that concerns me, but there's something about this Rams team that makes me think that all those veterans are pulling together because it might be their last shot. Right? It might be their last chance to potentially get one. Like, how many more good years does Von Miller have? How many more good years does
not many,
does Odell have? How many more good years does Stafford have? I mean, there's some legitimate question marks on that roster where, yeah, Stafford might play 6-7 more years. He might into his 40s. He might, but that's not a foregone conclusion.
No, definitely not. And they have that feel of a bit of a mercenary team. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Whitworth, kind of
like
40.
Yeah, kind of like Georgia was this year. I mean, you stated it with Georgia. Like, this had to be the year. The guys who were going to be moving on, the guys who just weren't going to be back, the way things were going to be different, that had to be the year they got it done. It feels a little bit that way with the Rams because we know in the NFL a lot of time, one year to the next, the aging process there happens a lot more quickly than it does in some other sports. And there are a lot of guys that seem to be right on the brink of that beginning to phase themselves out from an age perspective. I want to go back to that Auburn-Kentucky game coming up tomorrow in Auburn Arena. When we come back, Matt Jones of Kentucky Sports Radio, we had him scheduled for next hour. Bit of a conflict there. He's asked if he can move up. We're going to do that just because we want to get Matt on the show. So when we come back, we'll talk to Matt about his thoughts. Kentucky at Auburn. Can the Cats get it done? Will Auburn prevail? We discuss it next on McElroy and Kubik in the Morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubik in the Morning, 8:43 a.m. It is Friday, January 21st.
And it's a perfect day to have the professionals at Wayne's Pest Control come out to your house because right now you want to get in front of it. There's going to be bugs here in April. There's going to be bugs here in May. We know that. The good news is if you zap them now, you're going to be in a whole lot better spot. That's why you need to call the pros at Wayne's Pest Control at 866-WAYNES-1. Mention offer code JOCKS to get $60 off your initial EnviroPest treatment. These are the number one rated pest control providers in Birmingham for a reason. They also have that Quality Pro Certified designation. Goes to the top 5% of all pest control companies in the U.S. So make sure you give them a shout today. Tell them that we sent you from Jocks. They'll take good care of you because you want to get out in front of it. The pros at Wayne's take care of me. I know they'll take great care of you as well. Call them at 866-WAYNES-1.
Matt Jones of Kentucky Sports Radio joining us now on the Bud Light Hotline. Matt, we broke this game down, Kentucky at Auburn, a little bit earlier in the show. There are so many sort of micro matchups inside this mega matchup, number 2 versus number 12, Auburn, Kentucky, Auburn Arena. Obviously, we know that in and of itself is just going to be big, but is there an individual matchup inside of that that you're most excited to watch tomorrow at noon on CBS?
Well, first of all, I think the biggest matchup is what you said, which is the fans versus Kentucky. I mean, the Auburn Arena, it's not like this every game, but when Kentucky plays and when they have a massive game, is the best home environment in the SEC. Rupp's the best home environment game in and game out, but for a big game, I think Auburn is the best. So that's a huge thing. I mean, I think it's almost impossible to beat a good Auburn team at Auburn because of that. But with that said, this Kentucky team's pretty good. I think the biggest matchup is, does Kentucky have someone who can guard Jabari Smith? Because at all the other positions, I think this game is pretty even. and maybe Kentucky has a little bit of an advantage. But I just don't know if they have anybody to guard him. And that's how Duke beat Kentucky earlier this year. Duke, in many ways, really matches up a lot like Auburn. They have a big guy in Williams, and just like Kessler for Auburn, and then they have a power forward that's hard to guard. And Banchero was a matchup nightmare for Kentucky. They just couldn't, they didn't have anybody to guard him, and I think Jabari Smith is exactly the same way. Now, Kentucky's gotten a lot better since then. We'll see how they do. And I think Kentucky's going to want to do what I thought Alabama did a good job against Auburn, which was get Kessler off the floor by going small. But what was impressive is when that happened, Auburn still won. I think that's the most impressive win of the year for that reason, because guys like Kessler, if you go small, they can't play. That happened to Auburn, and Auburn still won. So that's part of the reason I'm so impressed with Auburn this year and why I think it's so important Kentucky find a way to have somebody to try to guard Smith.
When you think about just kind of the perception of Auburn, I know they're number two in the country, I get that, but there's still a significant resistance. I feel like Florida State dealt with this a little bit, and Leonard Hamilton actually coined the term blue bloods versus new bloods, and that's kind of what this weekend feels like. It feels like, I know Auburn's been to a Final Four, but people still feel like that was fluky, at least those that are outside of this footprint. So when you think about what this game could potentially mean for the perception of Auburn basketball, what does a win do for them nationally?
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff that makes that perception for Auburn. One, of course, is that they haven't been good for decades. I mean, college basketball, maybe even more so than college football, the same teams that were good in the 1970s are the teams that are good now. Like, it really is amazing how that happens. And it is hard for a new blood to get respect. Gonzaga has been great for a decade, and still people don't believe in them all the time. I think with Auburn, there's also a part that some of the country doesn't like Bruce Pearl. But this Saturday, that will be the biggest college basketball audience for a game all year. The Duke-Carolina game at the end of the year will be the only one that beats it. It leads into the NFL playoff game. It's on CBS. NBA fans are going to tune in to say, who is this Jabari Smith guy we keep hearing about? And Kentucky always draws a huge audience. Kentucky and Duke are the only two teams that draw a consistent big audience. So I think it's going to be a great platform for Auburn. I think what people will see when they watch it is they're going to see an arena that is surprisingly really good. Because, again, nationally people don't think about Auburn basketball as having a good environment. But it really does. So I kind of agree with you that it's a really good, not necessarily a statement game, because in conference play in basketball, teams lose. But I do think it is a statement as to, hey, this is a program you should pay attention to. That's part of what's hurt Auburn the last few years, is a lot of college basketball now is about, I want to see the guys that are going to play in the league. And Kentucky and Duke always have those guys, so that's why people want to watch them. And Auburn really hasn't, but you've got one now. Jabari Smith might be the number one pick. So I think all of that, this is a big year for Auburn basketball. Whether they win or lose Saturday, I do think it is sort of an arrival for Auburn as a team that nationally people will start to say, oh, I want to tune in and watch them.
How important is Shavier Wheeler, who leads the SEC in assists per game, but also has had some turnover issues the last few games? He's going to get Zepp Jasper. He's going to get KD Johnson in that backcourt. Is he kind of, I guess, the key for Kentucky offensively to be able to find a way to win at Auburn Arena?
It depends on how Auburn plays. I mean, I thought Texas A&M had a great game plan about trapping Shavier Wheeler and using his size as a disadvantage against him. He had 8 turnovers. But by the end of the game, they kind of figured out how to get around it. I suspect that style wouldn't work against them this time. I don't think he's the key. I mean, here's the thing. When you get big-time games with big-time players, you got to have dudes who can go get their own shot. And you all have at least one, maybe two, on Auburn. Kentucky really only has one. Kentucky's a great offensive team. But unlike a lot of Kentucky teams in years past, where every guy could kind of go get his, this is a team that relies on more old-school offense, and they really only have one guy who can get his own shot, and that's Ty Washington. I think he's the key to the game. He's had 4 games this year where he's not played well. Kentucky lost 3 of them and nearly lost to Texas A&M, and then at the very end, he took over. He's got to do that. I mean, I'm picking Auburn to win, but the scenario where Kentucky wins is that Ty Ty has 25 points. And that scenario, it needs to happen for Kentucky if they're going to win games like this. He's the dude that matters. Then, of course, you got to hit your open shots. Kellen Grady and Davion Mintz will get open looks. That's one thing about the way Auburn plays. You get some open threes. They got to make them. That's bottom line. And the one thing I am interested in down low, Oscar's better than Kessler. But Kessler obviously is a great shot blocker. And Oscar struggled a little bit this year with just long guys who could block shots. The dude with Western is 7'3", and he got 10 blocks on him. I'll be interested to see if he's figured out how to navigate somebody like Kessler. Because if not, if Oscar's not scoring and rebounding, it hurts UK's offense a lot.
When you think about the bigger picture SEC, and we could talk kind of where the league kind of stands as compared to, you know, some of the other leagues. Like, I think the SEC right now, and I promise you, I'm not wearing SEC colored glasses if they have those. I promise.
It's the best league. It's the best league.
It is, right? Like, but there's still a significant resistance to that. Like, why are people fighting that so badly?
Well, part of it is people don't start paying attention to college basketball until right now. And so they just sit there and say, well, the ACC is the best because it always is. But I think the SEC is the best this year. I think the Big Ten is very good. Big 12 is good again. But I do think the SEC is the best. You know, the bottom of the SEC is terrible. Georgia, Missouri, and Vandy are all awful. But I think what makes the SEC really good this year, Kentucky and Auburn are national championship worthy. Alabama, LSU, and Tennessee are really, really good. They're Sweet 16-level teams. And then on Arkansas, we'll have to see about Mississippi State. I want to see them against good teams. But those teams are good. Florida's playing better. So I just think the league is much, much better. To me, you judge a league by two things. Is the middle solid? The middle in the SEC this year solid. But then do you have four or five teams that can make the second weekend? Most years in the SEC, that's not true. It's usually Kentucky and one or two others. This year, I think there's five, and no other league, I think, has five. I mean, the ACC may only have one. So I definitely think the SEC is the best league. If it's not, it's the Big Ten, but I still, at this point, would take the SEC.
How do you view Shibue? Because we had Dane Bradshaw on the show earlier this week, and he said he might be the best rebounder he's ever seen, period. Any level. Where do you stack him up against other either SEC greats or just college basketball greats that you've watched?
One of the best college rebounders I've ever seen. I mean, for people who haven't watched him a lot, I would say he's the equivalent in college of what Ben Wallace was in the NBA for the Pistons those few years. A dude who rebounds much better than his size because he knows where to be, because he's physical. He's got long arms. What's crazy about him is he's not overly athletic. Like most guys like him that are really good at rebounding, like Dennis Rodman, was just a freak athlete. Oscar's really not. He's kind of like Ben Wallace. He just gets in the right spot and he's able to find the basket. Now he's not an exceptional leaper, which is why guys can block his shots. But for rebounding, I'm super impressed by the kid. In terms of college, I can't think of many better. I mean, he's the best rebounder Kentucky's ever had. The only one that's competitive in my life is Anthony Davis, but that's just because Anthony Davis was a freak. Oscar is a normal, not normal, but he's a more normal college player in terms of build, but he still gets to everything. He is special. I mean, this Kentucky team has had an insane amount of records broken. Ty Washington, who's not even the point guard, broke the all-time record for most assists in a game for Kentucky. He had 17 assists. He's not even a point guard.
Right.
And Sevier Wheeler is third in the country in assists. And Oscar is leading the country in rebounds. It's really amazing what this group of guys has done.
It's wild. Thanks, Matt. I know you got to get to your show. We really appreciate the time and catching up. We'll do it again soon.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, joining us on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste when there's fun. Bud Light is there. We're going to go back to the NFL playoffs, but something happened this week that flew under the radar that you may need to know about and may cause some changes for you. We'll discuss it next on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.